This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. And now on to the story that has been making headlines all week. Chocolate restores age-related memory. To paraphrase Paul Harvey, now the rest of the story. Researchers have suspected that a certain region of the brain was related to age-related memory loss. This isn't something like Alzheimer's. We're talking about the normal wear and tear that happens to our memories as we get older. I can certainly vouch for that. Building on previous research in mice, scientists at Columbia University Medical Center tried to establish a causal relationship with this part of the brain, or the dentate gyrus, to be exact. And what tools did they use? Cocoa flavanols. This isn't exactly chocolate, but these flavanols are found in it. Joining us now is the senior author of the study, Scott Small, professor of neurology at Columbia. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your interest.
Well, we always like to wait a while and then get to the real story.
Absolutely.
Has the story been overblown about chocolate restoring your memory?
Well, if that's the story, then it has been. I guess it's difficult, as much as I try hard to circumscribe the story to cocoa flavanols, for it to somehow be misinterpreted as chocolate and memory. That is wrong.
Well, give us the whole field here. What happened? What were you doing? What did you find out?
Well, I have to say your introduction was spot on, and I'm happy that you mentioned a study that Eric Kandel and I co-authored a year ago. I think you're alluding to that, and I think you interviewed Eric last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially we were trying to do the same thing in human subjects, this idea of testing causality, which is never very easy in science. In other words, until now there have been correlations between this region of the brain, dentate gyrus, and aging. But to really establish a causality, one needs to go in, increase the function of that area selectively, and show that you reverse memory. That's sort of experimental logic. And in order to do that, we were informed by a study by another colleague of mine, Fred or Rusty Gage at the Salk, who a number of years ago showed that cocoa flavanols, when given to wild-type mice, young mice, improved the function of the hippocampus, the same area, but selectively in the dentate gyrus. And so we knew that cocoa flavanols, in principle, can be given safely to humans, and that's really the background to this story.
Mm-hmm. And so you tried to use them to stimulate that part of the brain to isolate that, to show that that's the area of memory.
That's right. The logic is, well, if this area really underlies age-related memory decline, if you can improve it, you'll reverse at least a component of age-related memory decline. And that's what happened, more or less.
Does that also show that the flavanols do affect age-related memory?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I think you started the questions about perhaps things being overblown. The scientific motivation was, as I just described, really to test causality. But I suppose it's fair to say that it's inescapable that one of the kind of unintended consequences of the study is that dietary intervention might ameliorate or even reverse age-related memory decline.
Yeah, and one of the overlooked a little bit was the idea of what size a dose of flavanols you'd have to have.
Yes.
what do they taste like?
Well, in this particular formulation, subjects took a powder which they mixed into water or milk, and so it looks like chocolate milk powder, but it's not. It's sort of tasteless.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go from here? Is there one part of you says that we should look into the effects of this on the brain, or just to isolate what your original idea was?
No, we're definitely going to pursue this. And I think the next questions are more to pursue the kind of quote-unquote therapeutic angle. You know, if this first question was scientific, now that, we really are interested in seeing, can we use this? I'm hesitant to use therapeutic because it's a normal process, but you know what I mean.
And yeah.
What we're trying to do, and we're gearing up now for a much larger study, not only to replicate, because that's always a good thing in science, but also to ask more specific questions. So, for example, how low can we go with the cocoflavanols? We used a very high level because that's what previous studies suggested, but wouldn't it be interesting if we can go lower? The second question is time course. So we looked at, you know, at baseline and after 3 months, again, as a simple design, but now an important question is, one, how fast does the effect kick in? And second, once we stop the cocoflavanols, how long does the effect last?
Mm-hmm. And do you know why it works the way it does?
So why, as you know, Ira, it has different levels of answers. You can ask, you can answer at the molecular level, at the cellular level. At the cellular level, from animal models at least, we do know that cocoflavanols increase the synapses or the connections in the dentate gyrus. So that's a provisional answer to why what I'm interested in, what I know Eric's interested in, and maybe what you're interested in when you ask the question, is what's the molecular mechanism or mediator of this effect? And we have ideas, but we simply don't know.
Mm-hmm. Does it have an upper level that you know, is there a direct correlation between the dosage and how much memory loss there is, or memory gain, we would imagine.
Yeah. We don't know, and that's exactly, you know, this first study, which took us a while, it was a first a simple design, as we call it, you know, pre-post, single level. Now we're going to do this new study with more people, with more levels, more time courses. So I think that kind of relationship will be clarified in the second study.
How much better? Because you wouldn't be doing this if you didn't show real results in your study. How much better was the memory gain?
So how much? I'll tell you how much, and then I mean the reason I like your show and listen to it is because of your nuance, and then we'll get into the details if you don't mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in terms of how much, on average, so we gave this to subjects who were between 50 and 69, but before that we had to do a lot of kind of legwork, and that's part of the study, and I think why it was published in Nature Neuroscience. We had to, for example, test this cognitive tool across around 150 subjects across the lifespan from 20 to around 75. So we knew where typically 6-year-olds perform, where typically 30-year-olds perform. Based on that kind of diagram, the improvement in memory was equivalent, on average, of taking a 6-year-old and having their memory improved by 2 or 3 decades. So, you know, that sounds impressive, and maybe it is. A few nuanced points. One is that's the kind of finding that would be good to replicate in a larger study. And then the other question, which is relevant to all lab-based cognitive tools. You know, I'm a physician who sees patients. When I evaluate a patient with Alzheimer's, I give them a lab-based cognitive tool. How well does that really translate into real life, sometimes called ecological significance?
Yeah.
So I hope that wasn't too wordy of an answer
for
a very big question.
We like complex answers.
I know you do, but I don't want to push my luck with complexity.
I'll say, give our regards to Dr. Kandel for us, would you?
I will.
Scott Smalls, professor of neurology at Columbia University, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you again for your interest. Bye.
Thank you.